This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to 4.0 to Pro, the pickleball podcast that focuses on a single shot, tip, or strategy to improve your pickleball game with every single pocket-sized episode. Our goal is to make you better on the court every time you hear our voices. And now your hosts, 4-point-something Michael O'Neill and USA Pickleball National Silver Medalist, Senior Pro Scott Fliegelman.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to 4.0 Pro, your pocket-sized pickleball podcast, where we teach you a single shot or strategy every single episode. I'm Michael O'Neill here in sunny Aurora, Colorado, joined by my good pal, Mr. Scott Fliegelman, there in Boulder, Colorado, at Boulder Pickleball. What is happening, Mr. Scott? Happy Christmas. Happy New Year. How you doing?
Merry everything, Michael and our listeners. I'm having a great week. I'm working a bunch. A lot of our pro staff is off this week, so I'm on court a ton. But it's been a great week, and people are in a great mood. And, you know, we're here playing pickleball. It's all good.
Well, my week started out so strong. You know, I've been here now for, I think this is like day 9 or day 10. And my first week, I had such a blast. I played a bunch of times. You and I got a chance to drill more than once. And I had a pretty interesting experience that I wanted to share with everybody, because it was something that has happened many times to me, and I'm sure many times to people on the court, which is one day I'll play great, and then the next day I'm like, have I ever learned how to play pickleball? What is this? Why am I so poor on the court today? And what I thought would be really cool for this show, Scott, is that we could talk about sometimes how to survive when you're having a bad day on the court, and perhaps the reasons why that is, and then potentially how to fix it.
Well, I definitely have had this similar experience, and I'm looking forward to discussing it with you. I want to hear some of your thoughts about when that's going down, and I'll try to share mine. This isn't a topic that we've really talked about a lot in advance, so let's run it out and see where we go.
Well, first and foremost, the question is, what is a bad day? And in my definition, a bad day is when you're missing shots you know you normally hit, or you're not moving as well as you might normally move, which then, of course, might lead to you missing shots that you might normally hit. Or there could be external factors. It could be external stress, something going on in your life, et cetera, et cetera. But ultimately, if you're there for a tournament, you have to figure out how to fix it. If you're having a wreck day, then I think it's a really good time to assess why it's happening and potentially do some things to future-proof yourself while you're having that bad day, because we all will have bad days on the court. So I think first and foremost, I think we have to think about, why are we having this bad day? And something you brought up, which I thought was really interesting and very relevant, is you and I had a great drill session one of the first days I was here in Denver. And folks, I want you to forgive me. I'm on day 5 of COVID now. I got COVID on Christmas Eve. So Scott, you and I had this really great drill session. We talked about it on the last episode. Had a great singles day. But the following day, man, I was probably 60% of what I was the day before. And when I analyzed it, I thought, I've been playing so much over these last 2 or 3 days. I'm really fatigued. My knees and my legs are really tired. And how that translated for me, Scott, is that I couldn't bend down as I would have normally for a dink, meaning I wasn't lifting up on the ball as much. So my dinks might have been going into the net. I didn't have the burst on the court that I would normally have. I like to rely on my quickness and getting to the spot as quickly as possible. If I'm fatigued or my left knee hurts because I've had a billion surgeries on it, I'm not going to play as well that day. And when I have to think about how to assess those things and how to fix those things, there's like a number of things that come up. I think a lot of times this can happen sometimes match to match, tournament to tournament, rec day to rec day. And I'm curious if you have a firsthand experience on something like this and maybe how you started thinking about, well, man, I've got to fix this thing in the future.
I do want to add some to the definition of a bad day. I'm not surprisingly, as a professional pickleball instructor, I'm frequently sharing with my students when they're on my teaching court that I'm not looking for their best play. I'm looking for steam coming out of their ears, overthinking everything, not relaxed, not flowing. Now's the time for that. I've shared on the show before that I have an extensive endurance sport coaching background, and I frequently would have athletes come up to me saying the legs didn't have any snap today. I didn't execute that workout very well. And I found myself asking them, when do you need to be fast? And they'd look at me funny, and I'd be like, so like, when's your big race? When's the big day? And like, well, it's in 2 months. And I said, you know, we are very deep into a progressive training load right now. The training stress is at a point where you've not adapted, you've not recovered, you've not tapered. Now is not the time to be fast, nor feel like you should be fast. So I'm frequently going to ask myself or my students or fellow players on the court, when do you need to play your best pickleball? Do you need to be great today? Or are you working on things? Are you working on shot execution or court positioning or shot selection? If you're thinking about these things, then good for you. You are training. You are not peaking. So these are endurance sport concepts. And let's just be clear of our expectations when we step on the court. Is it supposed to be our best day or are we training?
Well, I love that. I'm a drummer, as I might have mentioned on this show a couple of times. One of my good friends is a guy named Mike Johnston, who's in Folsom, California, and he does these drum camps. And one of the first things you get when you come to his drum camp is you sit down at your little practice kit that he's got set up, and there's a set of drumsticks, and there's maybe a koozie or something. There's a bunch of little widgets that he has. But one of the things he has is this blue Lance Armstrong bracelet, a rubber bracelet that you put on your wrist that just says, embrace the suck. And he knows that the people that are sitting down in those drum stools are going to be uncomfortable for the next few days. They're going to be doing things that they're not good at, even if they're great drummers. And you're going to be doing all of that in front of a group of people. And if you don't understand the process of learning a new thing and just going, look, I know this is going to stink for a little while until I'm better at it, well, then you're going to really be frustrated on the court. So I really repeat to myself, embrace the suck a lot, especially when I'm playing with you. We had actually a three-person follow-up drill session with you. It was myself, you, and the lovely and talented Carolyn, who works there at Boulder Pickleball. And we were working on some new concepts for certainly Carolyn and I. It was a three-person cooperative drill that we were doing. And I remember feeling really off, partially because the concepts were new to me and I was doing something that I'd never done before. We were talking about the shield concept that you and I talked about on my little breakdown last episode, where keeping your backhand shield for counters in hands battles, but then also potentially switching the paddle to this lollipop idea, which I'd never done in my life. So I was working on this kind of new grip and thinking about transitioning from one spot to the next because you kept picking on either right shoulder or left hip or right shoulder or left hip and forcing me to keep changing how I was defending myself. So it was super uncomfortable while I was doing that. And I had to keep repeating to myself, I'm brand new at this. And it was interesting as we worked through the drill, Scott, I got better at it, especially on that forehand lollipop side. I kept being able to recognize you were going there and I would put it away. And as soon as I did, you switched to the other hip and I had to go back the other way. So I thought that was a really cool kind of real-time example of what we're talking about.
Yeah. And as a side note, Caroline, through your learning experience, benefited and I think really found that her shield is a little bit better on the forehand side as well. She had a lot of success with that. So maybe through your toil, we all benefited.
Well, one thing I mentioned to her, and this is part of the notes I have on why am I having a bad day, which is like, are the players better than me on the other side of the court? And they're making me uncomfortable. Maybe my play is exactly where it always is, but the people we're playing against are simply better. They're better players than I am. And I mentioned to Carolyn, I said, not only is Scott, you know, a 5.7 duper, he's a fantastic player, but truly one of the craftiest, most deceptive players, I would say, on the tour. Certainly one of the most deceptive players I've seen on the senior tour, but I don't know a lot of people that have the innate paddle skills that you do that are able to redirect and just misdirect the ball. So I'm like, when you're playing against Scott, you're swinging two bats because most people don't have that. Most people, you can do a much better read of where the paddle angle is and where the ball is going before he hits it. But that's not the Scott Fliegelman way, as we know.
Yeah, a little shout out to my friend and coaching colleague, Travis Rude. I actually had the pleasure of being coached by Travis. He's up in Vancouver, Washington, and he likes to call that non-linear strokes, non-linear shots, and he's very good at it. And I picked up some ideas from him, and it was great that Caroline could benefit from that, and you could as well. And thanks for the shout out. You know, Duper is not the be-all, end-all, but I'll take it when it comes my way. Thank you.
The other thing I noticed is, especially because pickleball is so inclusive, and we have people from multiple age brackets. I'm sure people listening right now, some are in your 20s, your 30s, your 40s, your 50s, your 60s, maybe your 70s, maybe your 80s. We all have different ways that pickleball affects our body. And it's such an addictive sport. It's like we can go as gentle as we want to, or we can go as hard as we want. And if we have a day that we went particularly hard and you're like, I'm taking tomorrow off, and someone goes, hey, we need a fourth. You go, okay, I can't tell you how many times that's happened to me. And then I get on the court and go, man, I'm not the man I once was. I do not feel like I'm playing very well today because I'm fatigued or my knees are sore or my arm kind of hurts. It's part of the game because we are also addicted to this really, really fun sport. So again, you've got to do a little self-assessment. How am I feeling today? Did the previous day take a huge toll on my body and I'm just not moving as well as I could? And if so, you got to give yourself a bit of a break. I know right now, Scott, you're dealing with a bit of a shoulder thing, which doesn't allow you to maybe drive or hit overheads as hard as you might want to hit. And I'm curious how your psyche is in that regard.
Well, I love the challenge. So we've talked about it on the show that without having top end pace, fall back on what you just credited me with as being one of the strengths of my game is my craftiness. And I look to put the ball away, prioritizing place over pace most of the time. I'm 56, so I'm not my most agile, strong athlete that I once was. I've got to find other ways to do that. I did want to circle back real quick, Michael, because I don't want to discount the value of something that you said and articulated really well. Are the players on the other side of the net just simply better than me? And that's not a cop-out. It's not an excuse. There are things that better opponents can do. For example, following their third shot, they can pressure. They can make you miss. They can make you feel like you're having a bad day just by their off-ball movement, just by being in the right spots on the court where your regular opponents might be a step or two behind. I've had the pleasure and the not so much pleasure of being on the other side of that. And I'm questioning all of these other things. And sometimes you do have to realize, well, lucky me, I get to be the worst player on the court today. And we've got to realize that, settle into it, play your game, do the best you can. And as we've shared many times here before, sometimes come walking off that court going, my regular shit don't work at this level. And wow, I had no idea that that was a thing. I had no idea guys could do that and be grateful for the rare occasion to be the worst one on the court.
I was lucky enough a few times to have coaching sessions with a guy called Rocky Carson, who's one of the real legends in racquetball. He's a multi-time national champion in outdoor and indoor and doubles and singles, and he's still playing at an extremely high level. And the last time we took a lesson, we all want to see how we do against a real pro. So we'd been drilling and we'd been going through some stuff, and I said, all right, man, let me get Rocky tournament mode for a couple of points and just see how this goes for common me. And when I tell you that I didn't have a single shot, but we played, I don't know, probably 10 points, and my heart rate was like 190, and I had not hit a clean ball yet. And I was like, man, what is going on? I can't seem to. And he says, I'm not giving you anything to hit. I'm keeping you uncomfortable every time you have to strike the ball. And I thought, well, what do you mean? And he goes, let's play another point. And the point, Scott, was almost identical to to the previous points we'd played, but then a ball came off the wall just enough that I could get a hold of it, and I ripped it and I put it away. And he said, see, if I give you something that's even marginally okay, you'll put it away. But I'm not giving you anything like that. To which I thought, first of all, the fact that he has that kind of control is bonkers. The fact that we're in a point where the ball is going 120 miles an hour and he can put it basically within a 6-inch square is kind of amazing. But even at pickleball, which is obviously slower, you get on some of these courts with these people. Like when we were warming up the other day, you put the ball to my right shoulder 3 times in a row. And I was like, man, what do I do there? I have no shot there. And it's just so laser targeted. It's obviously the difference between a pro and an amateur or a soon to be pro, I'd like to think. It's very impressive the amount of control that a higher level player has compared to what we have and how easy it can kind of dig into your psyche and you go, man, I must not be that good. It's like, no, you are. This person's just got 10,000 hours on you and they're just a little bit better. The final thing as part of the assessment portion of this is, how's your equipment? I hate to blame stuff. You don't want to blame your shoes or your paddle, but sometimes if you've got an old paddle and it's got some dead spots on it, it may not dink as well as you can. So having a good assessment of your paddle and your shoes and the equipment you're playing with can really matter sometimes. It's really hard to compensate for that when it's not consistent. So we obviously have to check our equipment, make sure it's all in fine fettle, as they say, as we get on the court.
I would add to that, Michael, how are the conditions that day? We need to be aware of everything's fine sometimes with our game. I can think back to Tournament of Champions a couple of summers ago, playing 8 a.m. It was a chilly Utah morning. We're playing with a Dura, 50 degrees or so, and I had no touch. And I was questioning everything about my game. Is there something wrong with my paddle? Am I not playing well? And it was just challenging conditions. The breeze picked up. It was just really hard to play well. And 4 hours later, when it was in the 70s, I was a rock star. So sometimes let's just be aware of nobody's playing well. Let's not get down on ourselves too much.
Well, and some people adapt to those conditions better than others. I'm really glad you brought that up. So let's say you're having that bad day and we got to fix it. You got to fix it on site because maybe it is a tournament, or maybe you just want to have the wherewithal to know how to fix it when the pressure's on down the road. And what I do, Scott, is I think back to basics. First of all, what are the fundamentals of this game? Am I executing them as well as I can? Am I doing the routine things routinely? And if I'm not, that might be the first place I check out.
I'm in agreement with that. Let me just add just something short and quick, because coming from my tennis background, is shrink the court. Bring the lines in. Let's just visualize the court 2 feet tighter than it is. If we're going to make a mistake, it's going to be maybe long or something. So let's just not be going for those sidelines. Play the ball toward the middle of the court a little bit more. Let's play a little bit better percentage pickleball.
I love that. And if you're in that situation where you are the weakest player on the court and you just go, okay, I've assessed that everyone on this court is better than me today, I might try to put my ego aside and go, okay, what's the one thing I can work on today that I can get better at? Am I just going to work on my third shot drop? Am I going to work on my third shot drive? Am I just going to work on dinking consistently? And to your point, maybe I might raise my dinks a little bit, a few inches, so I'm not hitting them into the net.
And we can also elect to be Rudy, be the guy on the court who's going to work the hardest. Even if your top end isn't as high as everybody else's, nobody's going to outwork you. You're going to move your feet. You're going to split step dynamically. I'm going to be quick. All of those things. I'm not going to be lazy. I'm not going to get my shoulders off axis. These are things I've shared that when we come out of a timeout at 7-7 in game three, I'll often share with my partner, quick feet. Let's just make sure that our footwork is crisp as we come out of this timeout. That's another thing that we can think about when we're having a bad day. Maybe we're just a step slow and we need to get the feet moving. If we've acknowledged that we're having a bad day, I mean, this may have a lot to do with our shot execution. Let's not forget the importance of footwork. We may as well start there as the foundation of our game. Along those lines, I have found myself the weakest player on the court, or my partner says to me, I'm not having a great day, I need some help. This is a time, especially in Forward to Pro, to think about threatening Ernie. Go ahead and step out and threaten Ernie and force those opponents who have been picking on you as the weakest player to either cough up up an Ernie ball or get your partner involved. We have shared what to do when the opponents are picking on you. And this is a great thing to do, whether you're on the forehand or the backhand side. And it usually works out really well. You don't get a ton of Ernies, but your partner gets involved.
I also like the idea, I've said multiple times on the court, hey, I'm having a bad day. Pick me up, partner. I need you to pick me up. You might also consider, if that's the case, think about stacking. Think about saying, why don't I become the cleanup hitter here? I'm going to go right side. I'm going to let my partner take 70% of the court, and I'm going to stay locked and loaded and ready on my backhand, and I'm going to give you most of the court right now, because I think that's going to give us our best chance to win.
And check your ego. Call a timeout or whatever it takes to have a quick chat with your partner and say, man, they're just really burying me at the kitchen line on the left side. They're finding my low backhand. Would you mind if we stacked so that I can get myself out of this situation for a little bit, get my confidence back, and then maybe we can revert? So it may be putting me on the right, it may be putting me on the left, but hey, would you mind if I played 5, 6, 7 points on my more comfortable side in order to get my mojo back?
Yeah, a lot of times it's the thirds that we're having a bad day with. I have definitely said to my partner, I need to drive a little bit here. I know that's kind of my bread and butter, and I'm pretty good at it. So I'm going to focus on a new school third or a full drive to get up to that 4-person ritual kitchen exchange and start that. And I think that's a great idea to think about, I'm going to drive some more thirds.
I agree. I had a student the other day who said, I hit 35 consecutive drops into the net, and she was exaggerating, before deciding to start driving. And I said, how about if you change that to 3?
Right.
Like, if we miss a few drops in a row, it's a pretty good time to switch that to a conservative 60% pace line drive, hopefully coaxing a little weaker fourth ball out of them, giving you a chance to drop from a more advantageous position versus banging your head against the wall with your third shot drop.
I actually had a tournament like that, Scott, where if you gave me $1 million, I couldn't hit a third. I couldn't calibrate, as you like to say. I just couldn't get the spot. I told my partner, I'm going to drive for this. And then when we happened to have about 10 minutes in between matches, I said, let's jump on a court really quick so I can just hit about 100 thirds and see if I can get this thing. And I did. I was able to calibrate. And then for the next two games, we won. So we kind of had a thing where we won the first two. The second two, we were all discombobulated. And then we won the next two because I had calibrated and we were much more rhythmic about how we moved on the court. So that calibration was super paramount for me.
Yeah. One additional quick story about that is, as we've shared, Dave Furman and I had a great run at last year's Nationals, getting silver in senior pro men's doubles. And at one point, the nerves were getting to me a little bit, and I was starting to miss some thirds. And I went over to Dave and I said, Dave, I may resort to driving a few of these thirds. And he says to me, I don't care what the heck you do, just get over the net. And he and I had that kind of rapport because we were in the middle of a 12-hour day together. And I cracked up. And it loosened me up, it loosened him up, and we went back on our run from there. But in the end, yeah, just get the ball over the net.
Well, if the bad day is mental like that, and it's not physical, and it's not equipment, and you can find yourself out of that funk, and then get back into your rhythm again, you manage to dig yourself out with that. Finally, there is an element where you just have to accept what's being given to you. Sometimes you're just having a bad day, and that's just what it is, and you have to just be okay with it. And if you have assessed why, and you understand why, that's probably as good as you're going to get that day. I think one of the big challenges, Scott, is if you don't understand why you've had such a bad day. If you can understand it, you're probably in a much better position than if you can't.
Yeah, I think that's valuable to internalize for yourself. And also, when your partner's having a bad day, sometimes it might be helpful to let them know, hey, it's okay. Let's go down swinging. This isn't the most important thing in the world. Let's do our best. I still love you. Let's just get out there and give it our best shot.
Yeah, I had that tournament as well this year. Shout out to Michelle. We had a tournament in September that, for whatever reason, I think we got in bronze or silver or something the previous tournament. We played really well together. That day, we were playing the same caliber of opponent and just, I think we went 2-7 or something. We just could not seem to get it together. And we both just at some point accepted, all right, this is just what today is. Like, we're just not getting the bounces. We're not playing as well as we normally would. We're not flowing as well as we would. Let's just have a good time and enjoy a little bit of pickleball here in Southern California. And that's what it was.
And maybe a follow-up to that, which could be a great topic for a future show. I just want to share one of my philosophies on this topic of having a bad day. One team's bad bad loss, don't forget, is another team's breakthrough victory. Why do we need to spoil their party? The greater their excitement, the higher the compliment in our direction. I've been on both sides of this. I've had a great win, and I don't need them to rain on my parade. Like, these are people I've idolized, and I finally got a victory over them. And we're excited about that. And that's a compliment to those players on the other side. At the US Open last year, I had what most people could call a bad loss. My opponents were so excited to have beaten us. And I turned to my partner and I said something along this line. It's like, we should take this as a compliment. We just made their year for them to have a victory over us. Let's be happy for them.
To that end, Scott, I have had, like you said, both of those. But sometimes if I've been terrible, I might say, I'm so sorry that I was so bad today. That's a bad apology.
Because I agree.
You're not giving them as much credit as they deserve.
Right.
Because they won. I think we've all done that in some level and said, man, I'm sorry I didn't bring my A game here today. And they're thinking, I brought my A++ game.
Right. So yeah, don't rain on my parade, man. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I think that's exactly the case. All right, guys. Well, thank you so much. Hopefully you can take this, arm yourself with it, and get yourself through those bad days. As always, we really appreciate you guys listening. Happy New Year, and we'll talk to you next time.
Thank you for listening to 4.0 to Pro. For more tips, find us on Instagram at 4.0 to Pro. If you have a pickleball question, submit it at picklehelp.com. Now, get out there and dominate. But don't forget to have fun.